Welcome to Chronic Combat Conversations, a live look at our best bets, picks, and predictions for every UFC event. With your hosts, TB Scouting MMA and
The Guru, back again for your flyweight title contender eliminator. You've got Alexa Grasso taking on Vivian Araújo on UFC Vegas 62, also known as UFC Fight Night 212 and UFC on ESPN plus 70. But before we can get into all that nitty gritty stuff, we got an awesome, spectacular, fantastic, not enough adjectives, guest in the house tonight. He's making money on DFS, pretty much every sport, UFC, football. Make sure you're checking him out on fightnumbers.com. John Kelly, DFS in the building. What is going on, buddy?
Yeah, first off, thank you for that intro. That was maybe one of the best intros I've ever had doing a guest spot. So I appreciate that. I don't know if all of it was quite warranted, but yeah, excited to talk fights with you guys. Thanks for having me on.
No, man, thank you so much for coming on. I mean, if you guys aren't following him already, you're making a mistake. The guy is making money across all sports and doing it long term, which is something that we preach religiously on this show. You know, if you're coming in listening just for a little snippet, just to hit one bet one time, hit or miss. We are long-term gamblers, long-term bettors, and I know you are too. So it's one of the reasons why we're so, you know, thankful to have you on the show.
Definitely. Yes. people, if you don't already have that little thing over there on John Kelly's YouTube channel, you see that the little subscribed with the little bell, make sure you click on that subscribe there, and make sure you also check out his work, fightnumbers.com, like we were talking about. John Kelly DFS, when you pull it up, that's what it looks like. So yeah, make sure you give the guy a little shout over there, because he's doing some great work on a consistent basis, and it's always smart analysis, and you know we love that over here at Chronic Combat.
Oh yeah, we get deep over here. Massive. Ooh. Deep.
I appreciate the plug, guys. That was quite the welcome.
Oh, we got you, man. It's only proper to do, you know.
Absolutely. So, yeah, so. we got these fights, man. These are some exciting fights. Anytime we got live fights, I'm excited. It's been 2 out of 3 weeks off, so you know we're really ready to get down to the nitty gritty here. 6 straight weeks of fights. So to kick it off, right, Alexa Grasso taking on Vivian Araújo.
Man, what a birthday present.
Apparently Alexa Grasso is 19. So what? That's a good start.
How did that happen? Oh no. Well, she's 29. must have messed it up as I typed in the thing. So oopsies.
I know
this will be the first of many mistakes.
That's your girlfriend, bro. How are you messing up her age?
Yeah, oopsies. I mean, this was like, you know, this is a birthday present. Alexa Grasso fight week at like on the weekend of my birthday. Here we go. Let's go. Couch Warrior, shout out in the chat. Justin. Because I bet about 20 lineups, 10 games, do more for both of you. Yeah, man, listen, I mean, we all got our own budget. So as long as you're playing with something that you can afford to lose, I think that's the biggest thing. So shout out Justin in the chat. Make sure you guys are giving John Kelly a subscribe. Make sure, you know, like we were saying, you know, over here, make sure you like and subscribe to our channel, because we're about to get down into Alexa Grasso versus Vivian Araújo. And, man, I think, like, you know, when you see, where you know, a matchup – No, don't worry. You know, I just got to make sure that people see it. They got to like and subscribe, you know?
Yes, they do.
The best bets, the best guests, and always free picks. That's our deal over here.
It is what we got.
Yeah, hell yeah.
If we got anything, it's that.
Hell yeah. So here we go. Alexa Grasso minus 210. Vivian Araújo plus 185. I think what you'll see here is that Alexa Grasso, she's going to have a little bit of advantage in the height. She's going to have a 1-inch advantage, but she's given up 2 inches in the reach. Makes up for it in the leg reach, 1 inch. So, like, overall, they match up pretty well. You're not getting any gigantic advantages in the physical matchup. Like we said, minus 210 Grasso, plus 185 Araújo, over 4.5 and minus 220. Is this the first 5-round fight for each of these fighters?
I believe so.
Yeah, and we're seeing over or under 4.5 for a 5-round fight. I get it. We're talking the women's divisions. Under 4.5 at plus 180. Especially, you know, total finish rate, Grasso at 35% and Araújo at 57%. So I get it. I can see why, you know, they're leaning towards this fight goes the distance. However, you know, I'm going to be over here and we'll take a look at, you know, some of these beautiful stats we have pulled up real quick, at least real quick, because I, you know, I think it's notable that Alexa Grasso very clearly is going to have at least a little bit of an advantage in the striking department. I think most of it comes from the defensive advantage that she has in her boxing. I mean, all, nearly 10% better from defense, although her distance accuracy is lower. I think in a fight, to be taking less damage overall is going to be bigger than landing on your opponent more. So Araújo, she's going to give it up to get some. That's something I think that we can expect. So overall, I mean, yeah, I definitely want to go with the Grasso side. I just don't want to touch it at minus 210, given that Araújo is going to have what looks to be a nice grappling advantage. But what we also know is that she has zero gas tanks. So Guru, is there any type of angle here that we could take?
I think the angle that you take is, you know, if you're really trying to play out how you, right, if you plan it out in your head and how you think it's going to happen, I'm feeling that Alexa Grasso is going to be the minute winner, right? And you see the strikes landed at distance there, heavily in favor of Alexa Grasso. And one thing that always stands out to me, especially when you have a fighter with a normal sample size, is when their strikes landed per minute is less than their strikes absorbed. You don't, that's really not something you like to see. And then, well, then you're like, if you're game planning for Araújo, you're like, okay, well, so you don't want to spend too much time on the feet with her. You're going to want to take her down, right? Because you see all that green over there in the grappling aspects. Well, Alexa Grasso has shown that A, she's no slouch in the grappling department, and B, that Vivian Araújo has shown that she has kind of some cardio issues. And I'm not convinced that she can actually spend 15 minutes at grappling, right? Because it's now a 25-minute fight. So that's even giving her the credit that she, after 15 minutes of grappling, she'd still have 10 minutes of striking to now go with Alexa Grasso, who's one of the better strikers in the division. And then you look at time spent at distance, the percentages, you see Vivian Araújo spends 73% of her fight time at distance. That's your grappler. That's how you want her to win this fight. She's showing you how she spends her time. She spends it at distance. So with all that being said, if there's a finish, I see it coming like later on. I don't see a repeat performance of the Joanne Wood fight for Alexa Grasso. I think this fight takes a little bit longer than that. So my handicap pre-tape, and then agreed with it after, which always makes me happy. I like the Alexa Grasso round 4-5 decision. I think if she gets a finish, it comes a little bit later as Araújo starts to take some damage and gets tired, but more likely, right, we kind of figure the decision. So without further ado, we got to turn this over to John Kelly. What do you got for us, brother? Main event.
Yeah, it's kind of an interesting matchup. I agree with a lot of what you guys said. The way these two match up, it's kind of funny because I think in a three-round fight, I would actually be interested in taking a shot on the underdog here at this price. You know, plus 185, Vivian Araújo potentially being able to land takedowns and out-grapple her. But you guys hit on the main thing, the cardio dynamic. You know, Vivian Araújo is somebody that historically slows down even in three-round fights. And yes, it did look better her last time out against Andrea Lee. I actually backed Lee in that spot, which didn't feel great despite it being, you know, kind of close. I actually thought Lee was kind of going to blow her out in the third round. It obviously didn't happen. But, you know, I'm not ready to say that Araújo has shored up her cardio issues. And now she's going up against a high volume striker. You guys mentioned the boxing, the speed, the footwork of Alexa Grasso. I think over 25 minutes, she's just going to be able to build on that skill set and really start to take over as the fight goes on, as we get into those championship rounds. And I think we probably do. So I don't mind that 4-5 decision. What price did you say you got on that?
I got minus 115 currently. So now I, you know, I'm a little bit of a whore for plus money, so it doesn't quite get me there, but it's pretty good.
Yeah, honestly though, that's a pretty solid price. Like I wouldn't back her at the money line price of minus 210, but you know, 4-5 decision at almost a pick 'em, I think that's pretty solid because I do think you're capturing most of her win condition. And again, while I think Araújo would be super live in a 3-round fight, I think it's very, there's a high likelihood that Grasso wins 4 and 5 at a decent clip here. So I think she is the rightful favorite. I'm just not interested in laying the big chalk price. So I think if you are going to back her, then the way that you did it, Guru, is probably the way that I'd go.
No, I appreciate that. And I also wanted to say that I was also as well on Andrea Lee, right? We thought that, especially after her win in the last fight, that she was going to come out and be like take it to her, especially in the grappling and even on the feet, because, you know, Andrea Lee's that supposedly good Muay Thai striker. But what happened in that fight, she got her nose broken, I think, like at least like a minute or two in. And after that, she then couldn't get the wrestling going, and then she just had nothing on her. She couldn't, after her nose broke and didn't want to strike and couldn't get it going on in the grappling. She was like, I'm out of here. And Arujo just beat the snot out of her. So unfortunate for us with that losing ticket, but I think we're going to get it back here on Grasso.
Yeah. I know Mushroom, if he was in the chat, he'd be talking about that Alexa Grasso round four, like plus 2000 or something. I think that's where it starts getting interesting in this fight, because Grasso is someone that she definitely builds, but I think also this is going to be one of those fights where Arujo isn't going to have the clear quickness and like boxing advantage. She's used to having that. And then when she has to go resort to the grappling, it's just something like with someone like Grasso, who has really learned how to not be controlled and use the butterflies, or, you know, even threatens a submission, like a nice arm bar on Carla Esparza round three, where she's been, you know, getting control, but like it shows she's able to adjust and like try new things even as the fight goes on. So like, five rounds of control and cardio for Arujo, I can't envision that happening. And like we keep talking about, so I think inside the distance for Grasso plus 240, if you want to get like super sketchy about it, there could be an opportunity somewhere rounds four or five. I'm not willing to play like the round props specifically.
That's a grandma's couch cushion play. Yeah. That's if you're up on the night and you know, you kind of want to throw a little extra action in there. I think that's fine. But not the strongest feel.
Yeah. Yeah, you can smoke out of an apple, but also the split decision. Yeah, I mean, because say Arujo wins the first two rounds and the third starts getting sketchy, and then Grasso clearly wins four and five. You could be seeing like the new Holloway versus Volkanovski. Oh yeah, grandma's couch cushions or couch warriors couch cushions?
Oh my goodness.
That's the real question. So yeah, hell yeah, man, thanks for joining. We love seeing you in the show. Always a good guy. So yeah, I mean, listen, I think we planted our flags on this one. We all seem to be on the Grasso side. It just depends on what prop, you know, tickles you the most. But I could tell you on our Bet MMA, we'll end up having a Grasso play for that 4-5 decision.
Yeah,
just about how many units after we see face off and just confirm everything went well with the weight cuts and everything.
For sure. And, you know, not to beat a dead horse, but it's exactly what we lined the fight. You know, I lined her at, you know, 70% to win, and that's whatever it is, minus 230. And that line has, you know, steady climb from like minus 180 to now minus 2. And there's, like we said, no value on the money line.
Nice. Yeah. So I guess without further ado, that'll take us on to our next fight. We got Cub Swanson versus Jonathan Martinez. I'm definitely excited for this one, you know, even just from like a perspective of, you know, seeing if the veteran can make a move to a new weight class and like reestablish himself, or if the young rising star can plant his flag and get a nice big victory over like a veteran that's not Frankie Saenz, you know. Or maybe in retrospect, it'll look a little bit like that. Cub Swanson cutting down to 135 for what, the first time in his career?
If it's not the first time, I think it is the first time, honestly.
It is. It feels like the first.
The very first. Dude, because, oh my God, that's so funny. I have a Fight Pass on, and Cub Swanson versus Mackens Semenzier on WEC just came on. But like, yeah, he's fighting at featherweight. The dude is just always been yoked. And to deplete himself, to try to cut weight, I don't get it. Maybe John has a better understanding as to why he cut weight to do this. Like, he's won three of his last four, and two of them he's lined as an underdog. Like, why is there no fight for him here? Like, I don't get it. Why are you doing this, Cub?
I mean, I don't think anybody understands it, to be honest. The guy turns 39 in just a couple weeks. He's never fought at bantamweight before. If you listen to any of the press this week, he had Dan Argueta, a teammate, answering for him, which was hilarious. But he mentioned, because somebody asked about it, and he was kind of cryptic with his answer. He was just like, you know, it's the fight game. Sometimes it's about making, giving more to the fight game. And that's what this cutting down to 135 is doing. Some cryptic answer that really didn't explain anything. So I honestly have no idea. It doesn't make a ton of sense to me, but I do think it adds a level of variance to this fight, because honestly at 145, even this version of Cub Swanson, I think would be live here against Jonathan Martinez. I think dropping down to 135 probably hurts him, but it's really one of those things where we start to guess a little bit. And typically when you're adding a lot of, or at least an extra layer of guesswork, then I typically like to just pass.
I'm glad to hear you say that, because that's kind of where I was going to end up feeling too. Like, I wanted to be on Cub. I liked Cub in terms of value here. For whatever reason, Jonathan Martinez always reminds me of what's his face? Who lost? John Castaneda. He always reminds me of John Castaneda. I have like a similar style, and they like to stand in front of their opponents. And like, I also feel like they like to get knocked out. I don't know. Like, it's just, I felt like there was a sneaky chance for Cub here, but the weight cut put me for sure on hold. And then this weird press stuff now has me completely off. And I just don't really want a part of it. I don't really understand it. TB kind of alluded to it when he teed up the fight. The young star in Jonathan Martinez, is that what he is? He's a young star? I don't know what's happening. Why is this? It's a co-main event because of Cub Swanson. Well, I'm very, very confused. He's beat, and let's just talk about his performances. He's beat Vince Morales, which is a really poor fight, just all around sloppy. Beats Alejandro Perez, dude gets rocked. Puts on skates there for a minute. And that dude, and he's old. And he beats Lazashvili. I think that's how you pronounce his name.
Yeah.
And that guy's not even in the UFC anymore. So what do this he's is your start? I don't think so.
Did they cut him?
After, no, I mean, that was his
he,
first.
He
fight,
took right? that fight on short notice. I was just gonna say he gassed heavy in that fight.
Well,
that,
so maybe he is, but we haven't seen him in a year now.
Yeah. I was just, that fight sticks out to me because that was honestly one of the worst bets that I've ever made. I backed him in that spot. I'm not a big Jonathan Martinez guy. Maybe on a full camp, more notice, my guy would have been a little bit more live there, but yeah, not my best moment. But I guess bringing that over to this matchup, like, I've never been a big Martinez guy. I think he's a solid striker. Obviously he's very, very powerful with the leg kicks. He is going to throw them relentlessly. And I do expect him to have the kicking advantage here. It's just the fact that can Cub Swanson, this version of him, close distance, turn it into a pocket brawl? Because in that scenario, I do think Cub is live here, but like we were talking about before, I don't know if I want to embrace that dropping down a weight class at almost 40 years old. And I don't like to bet on old fighters in general anyway, even though he's looked kind of still good in his last couple fights. So it's just kind of one of those things. I actually don't mind the under, or like a fight ends by KO, just with him dropping a weight class. He's been hurt to the body before the Giga Chikadze fight. Jonathan Martinez does not have a great chin to begin with. The dude's been knocked down 4 times in the UFC, not to mention the knockout against Davy Grant. So I think there is some potential for a little bit of violence here. I'm not sure what the price is there, but I don't mind to look at the under or a fight ends by KO. I'm just not going to play a side here.
Yes, now we're talking. So that's
that titillizes me a little bit more.
There's the angle that I've been sitting on here is, you know, you got Cub Swanson. We're worried, is he going to do well, make the weight? I know Martinez has won a lot of decisions, but he's a high-volume guy who throws some nice knees. Cub is a guy willing to level change. Martinez, you know, could very much overwhelm him if Cub can't handle his weight cut. Also, if Cub comes in looking nice and good, I mean, what's his win probability to get the knockout here? To you know, or even hurt him and go for a back take. You know, he can get finishes in a variety of ways, whether it be striking or grappling. So I think ultimately this fight doesn't go the distance at plus 100. That's worth something to me. It's saying it's 50-50. I think, you know, based off of all these things we're scared of on either side, I think it points more to like a 60-40 direction. So I think you can get some value, and I found some plus money for you, Guru. So, I mean, Are we digging into grandma's couch cushions
here? I mean, at the end of the day, it's not the worst thing to bet on, but I just get scared off it because Jonathan Martinez is not exactly known for volume. Like, so if he ends up respecting Cub, they could just kind of be kickboxing for 15 minutes too. That being said, Cub is already notorious for fighting with his hands like down by his belly button. So like, you know, having a super low guard with a weight cut issue, right? Okay, so maybe he does. Maybe there is a problem. So, but yeah, I think we've beat it to death enough. This fight's a huge question mark.
For sure. I think you point out Jonathan Martinez has 5 knockdowns and he's been knocked down 4 times.
Right.
Cub has 9 knockdowns, been knocked down once, and moving down a weight class, I'm sure he's willing to add to that number there. So I think that's kind of where I lean on this fight.
Just no distance then.
It's not going the distance.
No distance.
So yeah, no, that's I mean, hey, listen, we have plenty of more time to see how they weigh in, have thoughts change. But if you wonder what TB's play is, I'm trying to get Guru to throw like 1 unit on fight doesn't go the distance plus 100.
Let's see how they look. Tomorrow Friday?
So, no,
it's not.
It's not. But here we go. We got our next fight. We got Askar Askarov versus Brandon Rawdog Royval. I think this one's going to be an awesome fight because Brandon Royval's in it. And no matter Askar Askarov's tendencies, Royval's going to have a fun time. So even if he's getting controlled on the mat and stuff, I think we're going to see some fun scrambles and everything. So Royval, though, coming in 3-inch height advantage, 1-inch reach advantage, 2.5-inch leg reach. Royval is 1 year older. Both guys are southpaws primarily. And, you know, I think Royval, he's got actually one more fight in the UFC than Askarov, even though Askarov has been around for more years overall. So Royval, the more active fighter. I'm excited to see because, you know, basically the question is, did Royval do anything to fix all the issues from his fights with like Casey Kenney, Rogerio Bonsarine, these guys that are able to get control and use their own high-level grappling to avoid being submitted by someone that really relies on, you know, explosive finishes, whether it be spinning elbows after getting dropped, flying knees, even throwing some solid regular Muay Thai combinations. Brandon Royval is a fun fighter. So at plus 205, there could be some inherent value, but also Askarov at minus 245, and you start looking at, like, some of the winning methods. You see that Askarov by submission is plus 300 and by decision is plus 130. I think the Pantoja submission is sticking out in a lot of people's minds for the Royval side here, where they see, you know, that the submission might be a higher probability, but like even plus 300, I think is giving too much credence. Like the decision prop for Askarov at plus 130 should, you know, probably be priced, you know, a little bit higher, especially given how big of a favorite Askarov is and how every single fight that he's won in the UFC has been by decision, even against the skeleton of Joe Benavidez. So Guru, I'm trying to get either, I was looking at the plus 130 decision. You also had a solid idea. But overall, I just think Askarov is going to make it as boring of a fight as he possibly can. And if he hadn't lost to Kai Kara-France, we would probably be seeing the same line that he was put at against Kara-France in like the minus 300 range. Does Royval have a shot here? I think so. Guru, get us started as to what you think.
Yeah, Royval is always a live dog because of the way in which that he fights. He wants to create carnage. He wants a train wreck. He wants to get in close. He wants to throw elbows. He wants to grapple and go for submissions. He's certainly a scrappy, interesting fighter. Honestly, if you have a book that lets you bet fight of the night, I think this fight might even have a chance to do that. With all that being said, I feel like Askar Askarov is one of the more, I don't want to say boring, but like he wants to blanket you. And he's not necessarily somebody that does a lot of damage either in his way to get there. Like you watch the fight with Kai Kara-France and he just backpacks him like a monkey. And like, that's what he's trying to do each time. He just kind of uses the cage and he's just trying to get his back. And like, you haven't heard him yet. And now you're all sweaty and slippery. So now you're sliding right off and you're tired. And now you can't get takedowns. And Kai Car-France showed unbelievable athleticism to stand up on one leg and bounce around and able to stand up. It was incredible. My notes on Roy Val, he's already shown me he's somebody that was too willing to kind of give up takedowns or flop to his back or play from bottom because that's how he likes to fight and win. So, or, you know, his thought of winning. So I'm not convinced that he doesn't want to play jujitsu with Askar Askarov on the ground. So if he doesn't have the urgency to get back up to his feet and tire Askar out and make him grind, then it could be a long 15 minutes for Roy Val. But that being said, like, it's really tough to lay the chalk on Askar Askarov. Even still, I agree with what TB said. I think that the line is like kind of flipped where it was for the, like, he probably should have been more like minus 230, minus 245 for the Kai Car-France fight, as opposed to being minus 360 or whatever nonsense he was. But here and now, I think the way I'm looking at it, I'm not even sure necessarily why, because like we said, Askar hasn't gotten any finishes yet. I really more think it could be more Roy Val putting himself in a bad spot. But I guess I would take, instead of Askar by decision plus 130, I would sooner do Askar round three or decision plus 100 on FanDuel. So that's kind of where I lean. But I don't hate anybody trying to take a shot on the dog at plus 205 here. Askar's already shown himself to, now obviously not be old at 29 years old, but I don't know. He didn't look great versus Kai. So, John, give us something good here, but I have a feeling you got something brewing.
Yeah, this is actually one of my favorite spots on the card. Brandon Roy Val, I think there is clear value on Roy Val in this spot. Yeah. And one thing I'll say for starters, like, I just think both of these fighters in general are guys that I'm hesitating to back as sizable favorites just based on the way that they fight. Obviously, Roy Val is more of a high variance. He's not really a fighter that covers price tags, because he adds so much variance to his fights. And for that reason, that's what makes him typically a live dog in most matchups. On the flip side, Askarov is a guy who kind of fights on thin margins. You know, most of his fights in the UFCs, in the UFC, has been very competitive, whether he was the favorite or whether he was the underdog. And that's because he only has one path to victory. That is to go to his wrestling, to land takedowns, and to control you in the grappling. And I think that's a red flag here against Brandon Roy Val, who's one of the trickier submission grapplers. I don't think he gets enough respect in that regard. I think a lot of people, you know, just chalk it up as like, oh, he's a meme style fighter. They just want, everything's a meme. Whenever there's a finish, it's just a meme. Like, and that's why I think guys like him are just very hard for people to really grasp their true upside in fights, because they're just not factoring in that level of variance can create chaos. And guys like Brandon Roy Val thrive in that chaos. I think Roy Val is a better scrambler. I think he's clearly a better striker. I think he's going to throw more volume on the feet. Askarov is another guy. People talk about Roy Val's striking defense. Askarov fights with his hands down quite a bit. This guy can get tagged up by jabs repeatedly. Roy Val has so many more, the variety of kicks, punches, elbows, like his attacks. He's just going to be able to do what he wants, I think, on the feet, whereas Askarov basically just has a body kick, and he was getting tagged with the jab in his last fight. He's been rocked before multiple times. I think the durability clearly favors the dog here as well, and I think Roy Val has most of the submission grappling upside as well. So it's just like, you're giving me all of these advantages. Oh yeah. Ooh. And I'm getting the guy at plus 200 or plus 225 on Bet Online earlier. Wow. Today. So it's like, I really think this is like one of the clearer spots of the past couple months, to be honest. I think there's clear value on Roy Val here.
Huh. And that, interesting note. Thank you, Kevin Nicholson, PT in the chat. Askar coming back from the wrist surgery prior to the Kai fight. Longstanding problem. He finally had to have surgery. So I'm interested to see what happens returning from that. And thank you for hopping in the chat, Kevin. Appreciate that. Guru, what was your point you were going for?
No, exactly. I was going to read surgery suit. That is that's kind of a big deal. But man, if I wasn't like, I think John kind of got me, man. I'm excited. Like, I mean, at plus 200, I am intrigued. You know, this is you got to be willing to risk it. You got to risk it for the biscuit, you know? And I think at plus 200, it's a risk. It could be a risk worth taking. Like, I'm not happy with Askar. He didn't fight well. So like, to risk it against him here might be worth it.
Yeah. Yeah. I certainly understand it all. And I love Royval as a fighter, and he's so exciting to watch. And, it's just, I really just think that Askar
look at the pace at distance numbers, right? Because you see the strikes landed, all of a sudden it's even, but that pace at distance, he lands like literally like 10 strikes more.
Yeah.
Like, that's crazy.
Yeah, it's so overwhelming. Yeah.
And exactly. And we've seen Askar's ability or not ability to do well when being overwhelmed. Mm. Look at his last fight. So I actually really like the things that he was saying.
39% takedown defense, though. He's been taken down 17 out of 28 times. I really don't like that. As much as I want to take the dog, it's just the opponent control. Exactly.
Yeah, there it is. That's the real number. It's not only just the takedown defense problem, which is really bad at 39%, but you have a 46% opponent control rate. That's half your fight. That's a lot of time to be spent in defensive positions or trying to go from sub to bottom.
Yeah, and make no mistake about it. Askarov will land takedowns here, probably multiple. But I think what's more enticing to me is who wins the scrambling positions. We saw Pantoja out-scramble Askarov multiple times. We've seen it in the past against Brandon Moreno as well. And those guys are obviously really good grapplers as well. But I do think Royval is going to be very, very active on bottom. And the last thing that I didn't even mention is the cardio dynamic. We saw Askarov fade against Kaikar France. We've seen him slow down. I think it was the Tim Elliott fight as well. Royval is going to be able to keep pace if he needs to. So that's just another thing where it's like all these intangibles point towards the dog, in my opinion.
I really tried, but I think you got me too, man. I really tried to keep my guard up here just in case, but like, you're checking off all the boxes I'll be looking for. And I'm feeling like, I might have been giving Askar too much credit where I've tried to fade him in the past.
He's got 7 submission attempts in 6 UFC fights. Like, the dude is legitimately going for it.
Did Bontorin tap?
That's the real question. I don't think so. I think he kind of like went for one and then decided not to. But that's not a tap. You have to like, the idea is to tap more than once, right?
It's call it what it is. John, what's your
thought? I don't know. I've definitely seen people tap with just one, like at like live rolls and stuff like that.
Right.
Like I don't know. I thought he tapped, but I could be wrong. The one, what was I going to say? There was one other point I was going to make about this, but I just lost it. If it comes back, I'll say it.
You're allowed to bring it back whenever you get it, man. Your points are good always. So, but for now, we'll get to this slop fest. We got Jordan Wright versus Dusko Todorovic, the battle of the failed prospects off of Dana White's Contender Series. Loser goes home.
It's my Cinderella.
There he is.
It came back. So before we go to the next fight, the other thing I was going to say is, looking at the Pantoja fight, like, the narrative could be so much different. Remember how that fight started? Yeah. Pantoja just walked him down immediately, jumped on a guillotine. He obviously didn't finish it, fell off, threw up like 4 other submissions. A couple of those were kind of sketchy. Like, you don't think Brandon Royval is going to do a lot of similar things there? You don't think he could wrap something up? If Pantoja were, and obviously he didn't because Askarov's a pretty decent defensive grappler, but if he were to have pulled off one of those guillotines or one of those submissions, the narrative would be so much different coming into this fight. Like, it would be like, oh, Askarov's a good control grappler, but he does put himself in some bad spots. He could put himself in the submission. And we're just not hearing any of that. All we're hearing is, oh, he's going to lay and pray and control Royval. Good luck controlling Royval for 15 minutes without putting yourself in a couple dicey spots here.
Without doing any damage. He doesn't do damage to his opponents at all.
He's not Darren Elkins. He's not the damage.
God damn it. No.
But I've already made my I've planted my flag on that one. That was just the last thing before we moved on to another fight I had to get.
Damn, man. Yeah. All right. Well, you brought me right along with you. And now I'm looking at finish props for Royval. We're getting crazy, but Might just have like to be the money line.
Plus 550 submission, plus six or plus 600 inside the distance, 900 for KO with like a spinning elbow, but he's probably more of a club and sub guy.
Yeah, no, I'm excited. Oh, hey, PC Strickland Pantoja line moves to minus 1,000. Comes out to 50 cents. All right. Thanks, PC. We appreciate you being in the chat, buddy. Our next one. So we got our next one. We got Jordan Wright, Dushko. We already gave them the failed Dana White Contender Series prospect. That's what they've been dubbed as at this point. Jordan Wright coming in, 1-inch height advantage, 3-inch reach advantage. He also has the nickname Beverly Hills Ninja, where Dushko, I'm not even sure he has a cool nickname. Or at least one that's really worth it, right? I mean, Guru is generally the nickname guy.
Thunder. So. Dusko Thunder Todorovic.
I mean, that's not so bad, actually. I got to give him credit. He probably wins.
But although you're Thunder, you're just the sound. You don't actually hurt anybody.
Oh, not Lightning and the Thunder, just the Thunder. Okay.
Just the Thunder.
All right, so anyways, we're looking at minus 205 Todorovic and plus 175 Wright. And the over 1.5 is at plus 195, whereas the under 1.5 is at minus 240. It opened somewhere near like minus 130. I've seen some people snagging that at. So it's really run away as the week's gone on, and it's really making me want to fade the narrative and take the over 1.5 at plus 195. But Guru makes some good points, and he talked me down from that ledge. He'll tell you the prop that he found. I'm saying Jordan Wright plus 175. I think the dude is going to have the advantage from a wrestling perspective, from a size perspective. I think in the striking, he's going to have more volume, and he's going to be able to lay out more damage than Dushko. The only person I finished in the UFC was Daquan Townsend Todorovic. Guru, go ahead, man. I like Jordan Wright plus 175. It's, you know what it is? Hold on. I just did this for this reason. It's a grandma's couch cushions.
Is it?
For this fight.
I mean, this fight's really crazy. I call it my Cinderella fight. Because you literally have about 5 minutes until somebody turns into a pumpkin. probably less. Somebody will be a vegetable very quickly in this fight.
Calabasa.
So when you look at that, why? What has Dusko done in his UFC career to make you think that he should be a minus 200 favorite to anybody?
Anyone.
I don't, maybe in a different division or something. Like, not here. Jordan Wright, again, will turn into a pumpkin in about 2 or 3 minutes.
It won't take long.
It will not take long. And he will find a way to, he will snatch defeat from the jaws of victory. He will find a way to do it. However, I don't trust Dusko's chin or his ability to land or anything. Like, I mean, just none of it. So
listen, the Jordan Beverly Wright, Hills Ninja, he Jordan knew Wright, to take down MAB.
Jordan Wright is going to come at him like a house of cards on fire. That's also being electrocuted. I don't know. But what I do think is that this fight doesn't even start round two. So that's kind of where I was maybe thinking about it. That round prop was doesn't start round two is minus 135. So that's not terrible. I mean, 5 minutes for these guys is going to feel like an eternity. I mean, literally, you look at him. Four of his last five fights for Jordan Wright have ended in the first round, and 3 of 4 for Dusko have ended in the first round. So I really do. Somebody's going to be a pumpkin. So I'd rather take the dog. What do you think, John?
Yeah, I'm happy you guys are on the Beverly Hills Ninja side here. I'm not going to play him at the money line, but this is one where, you know, I know there's people out there listening that like the long shot props. They love like the round whatever, you know, the big, they want that big plus money. So I think this is the fight where you try to find that. Like, and honestly, I think not many books have the props out yet. Bet Online had like plus 600 for Beverly Hills Ninja KO1. I actually think it should be higher. I wouldn't bet that, but I do think that's the way to target him. Round one submission is 25 to 1. If you're looking to get real crazy here, I think that I'm just never a Dusko guy. Like, I know that's the general consensus now, but like, you guys forget, like, coming off Contender Series, people were talking about this kid like he was a stud. And like, I never saw it. Like, the fight against Teddy Ash, I thought was super boring. Held him against the cage for half the fight on Contender Series. Obviously, he beat Daquan Townsend. Didn't even think it was really all that impressive the way that he beat him. And then, like, he's basically been exposed since. Early on, they talked about how good his boxing is. You know, his head movement is so great. And then, look, you know, you see it time and time again. These guys that rely only on head movement, at some point, they're going to get that chin checked. And obviously, it's happened to him a couple times now. So I think Wright at least has the potential to maybe land something heavy, swarm him early. But obviously, it's Jordan Wright. So you have about, like, 3 to 4 minutes of finding a finish. And then if he doesn't do that, then I think he probably gets finished himself. And I think that's why we see Dusko as a minus 200 favorite. It's just on the simple fact that he has more ways to win, clear cardio edge. I mean, I don't see a scenario where Wright can win a decision, to be honest. So there's definitely more ways that he can win, but I'm never laying it at this price. I think you target a long shot on Jordan Wright, or you bet the under 1.5. Or you parlay it since it's like minus 200 now. But I think that's the way to play this fight.
Jordan Wright, round one KO, plus 450. Still not even steep enough for me.
Oh, not even close. Yeah, I remember betting Jordan Wright like 12 to 1 KO one in I think his last fight, which lost. But still, I just think those numbers need to be higher if you're only targeting round props.
I couldn't agree more, especially if you're parlaying the round with the method and the fighter, and they're not even giving you plus 450. That's nothing.
Yeah. I mean, at that point, you might as well just take the money line.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. And they're distressed. And it's even crazier because it's like Dusko KO round one plus 130. Like there's no money to be made.
Wow. That's wild.
Yeah. So. Actually, that actually is kind of wild. Why is that plus money?
What was that again? What was
it? It's plus 130 for him by round one KO. Like if he's such a heavy favorite,
right?
This guy's gonna turn into a pumpkin. Why is that plus money?
Well, him in the under 1.5 probably isn't, and that's probably
right.
That's probably like where it would happen to fuck you over.
That's a good point, right? Because you don't trust Dusko, I certainly don't trust Dusko's immediate KO power, even if Jordan Wright likes to turn into a bump.
Damn, Justin's getting crazy with this parlay out here. Damn, Wright, Royval, Jackson parlay, a main event, dog, and throw Malco. Oh my goodness. Okay, Justin is obviously off the good stuff right now. I love that. You love a nice dog parlay. But yeah, we're gonna get flying along to our next fight here, right?
You play too many of those parlays, you end up pawning grandma's couch, and then she has to disown you from the family. It's like a whole thing.
Round robins. I've actually had a lot of fun with round robins and underdogs. As long as you play them each individually and you do like 10-cent parlays on like the five leg, you know, whatever's that you're doing, like keep it super light. But round robins have been super fun if you want to do stuff like that. So next, we got Misha Cirkunov versus Alonzo Menifield. Misha, I can't make middleweight for real. Cirkunov versus Alonzo, I should probably knock out Misha in his return to light heavyweight Menifield. Alonzo at minus 205, Misha plus 175. Menifield going to be giving up a little bit here. 3 inches of height, 1 inch of reach, 2.5 inches of leg reach. So the over 1.5 at minus 110, under 1.5 at minus 110. I think overall, you know, it's just to keep this fight as simplistic as possible, Alonzo Menifield really should be knocking out Misha Cirkunov if he's half the fighter that he claims to be at this point. And I think it's as simple as that. I mean, Misha, if he gets his hands on him and survives the barrage that Menifield is certain to land at least 3 times before Misha decides to get his hands on him, then things could get interesting for sure. But I'll take my chances on Alonzo by knockout is plus 100 still, which I think is kind of crazy that they haven't flipped it to minus money yet. I'd like to see, you know, Misha back at 205. I'm sure he'll be happy. But you got to remember his knockout losses have come at 205. So I think, you know, he just – he can't quite take the power up there from like guys like Ryan Spann too. It's not even, and you know, I know Johnny Walker got him with the flying knee and everything, but I mean, that just doesn't make me feel great when it comes to Misha Serkinov. So overall, like, okay, so at the end of the day, my parlay here is to get the round one knockout for Alonzo Menifield is +200. So if it goes the way that you think it will, you can add another +100 on to your +100 KO. You want to put it together for round one. You know, let's see. So, okay. First off, Justin knows our show because one, he's got two grandmas, elbow cuff. One can sacrifice their couch. That's pretty good.
God. That is funny.
I've got zero grandmas, so I'm just holding on.
Jeez.
All hopes here. And then Menifield, keep it rolling, rolling, rolling. Yes. There you go. That's Guru.
Why did he RIP Limp Bizkit? Fred Durst isn't dead.
I don't know. So maybe Limp Bizkit is dead, or is it like Cobra Kai never dies?
No.
So go ahead, Guru. Go ahead.
Yeah, I'm not Sue. This is how crazy this whole card is. I think Alonzo Menifield is my probably my favorite play of the card. Like my favorite, if that makes any sense.
Favorite.
Like, and that's like the really, ooh, really sketchy thing to say.
Yeah.
Alonzo Menifield is a sketchball of a fighter. With all that being said, you've seen Chris Serkinov get finished in two of his last three fights. What I like better than the KO. Maybe I'm just a little gun shy because I remember the Von Flew choke that he had over our boy Fabio Chiron. But I like Alonzo Menifield just by finish in general, which is on DraftKings at the moment -110.
Ooh.
So I don't think that FanDuel has their lines open. Oh, they do.
So you think he's going to submit him?
It
could be.
He got submitted by Terman. So, I mean, but Terman's like, that's what Terman does.
Right. So, like, that's an arm bar. You know, like, Alonzo's more like Fabio Chiron doesn't know to let go of a guillotine from when I'm in side control. And then,
yeah.
What was his other one? Oh, no. He knocked out Askar, right? With the ground and pound.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
I mean, he'll grapple. He'll wrestle. He likes. Guru was the one on scouting that was like, yo, Alonzo's wrestling is actually really good. He loves watching college wrestling. Like,
yeah.
And you go back and you're like, damn, like the switch that he pulls on William Knight. Holy shit, man. That was a crazy move. So yeah, I do really like Alonzo's chances to, even if Misha does go for the takedown, Alonzo should be able to stuff the initial ones. But yo, John, so where you land on this one? I think we talked our asses off.
I think these are two guys, at least for me, that I don't want to lose any more money on. Like, I feel like I've been chasing knockout props on Menifield every fight in the UFC for the most part. I think I finally quit him against William Knight. I think I actually had William Knight there. But really, like, the thing with Menifield is, like, yes, he has the obvious power, right? Like, the round one knockout upside is clearly there. But the dude's fight IQ is a glaring issue to me. Like, the way that he should be fighting is, like, fight to your strengths, which for him is like we know you're gonna gas out. At least you're powerful in the first round. You should just go rabies in the first round and try to land something heavy. Like, that's really how he should fight all of his fights. Instead, he tries to do all this other stuff, and like I just think it makes him so much lesser of a fighter in terms of his win probability. This dude is inviting people into the clinch, even though he's gassing out at a quicker rate than if you were to just stay at space. Like, the cardio is a massive, massive issue, which is why I would never lay chalk on him, even in this matchup. I think Serkinov maybe has some submission grappling upside, but he's also very fragile as well. I think a lot of things are pointing me to the under here. I know it's under 1.5. So again, like the right fight, you're really kind of banking on that round one finish. But I do think both guys, just the way they fight, it kind of just leads into the other person's strengths. Like, if this turns into a stand-up war, I think Menifield clips him, knocks him out. If he does, you know, pull him against the cage and try to, you know, clinch with him, then maybe Serkinov can wrap something up and get off on his grappling a little bit. So I think the under is probably what interests me the most. In terms of DraftKings, I'm probably just going to hedge it out. But yeah, it's not one that I'm going to be backing aside here. I think I like the under or some form of a violence prop.
I really don't mind a violence prop at all, because that's kind of where I was looking on a chalky favorite. So might as well take a favorite prop that gets my money off of somebody I don't trust. So I'd rather put my money on somebody I do trust, like John Kelly. Yeah. So that makes sense to me. Oh, yeah. Because, yeah, I agree. Alonzo Menifield is one of the more sketchy fight IQs. And to me, it was like Misha Cirkunov kind of back up against the wall here, lost his last three. And I'm kind of like predicting into the future that, you know, Tuesday you're going to see the roster update saying that he's that he's not there anymore.
That's cold, man. That's cold. Yeah.
Listen, you know, but you know what, man? Nobody would be happier than me in that respect to, you know, say kudos that he gets another four fight deal that and pulls off some sort of crazy finish over this behemoth he's about to fight. But I think they're kind of showing him the door here.
Shout out Daz, because I agree. You know, that's why I got the Alonzo side. But I get it. It's sketchy. You can't be laying your whole bankroll on Alonzo Metafield. And yeah, man, just go rabies.
Just go rabies.
We agree with John Kelly. That's that. I mean, if that's, you know, if I could guarantee that, I would
get
have
that
my
on
whole
a t-shirt.
Life.
Let's go.
I mean, it's just like it's the whole Johnny Walker thing. Like when he first came to the UFC, he fought to his strengths. He's an explosive athletic guy. And then he changes camps and tries to turn into like a smart point fighter. Like it just does not work. So I don't know who's coaching these guys. Not that I should be coaching, because I definitely shouldn't. But I just feel like some things are so obvious. Like when your best path to victory is to literally just hit somebody as hard as you can within like the first 3 minutes, then maybe you should just try to do that and only focus on trying to do that. But that's my stance on
Matthew. I don't know why that's so funny to me. Maybe it's just like, it's, I don't know. That's just really funny. And it's true. It really is. Maybe that's why it's funny, because it's fucking true. But that's actually hysterical.
All right. Well, fair enough. I think we gave that fight enough of a, you know, breakdown.
I think we finally finished the main card, right? No, one more on the main card.
This is a pretty sizable main card, though, right? Or is it just the more interesting ones are up there, I think? But
yeah,
this one, we got Manny Martinez versus Brandon Davis. Martinez -155 to Davis +135, over 2.5 -135, under 2.5 +105. They match up pretty well. Brandon Davis, 2-inch reach advantage. Manny makes that up on the leg reach, but they're the same height. Brandon Davis, a lot more UFC experience, but I mean, he's just got some bad losses in there too. So it's like not the best experience overall, and his wins are not so great. So yeah, at the end of the day, I think Brandon Davis is someone that's going to look to make the fight ugly and close. And he's never quite the type to pull away. You know, his accuracy isn't great, but his distance defense, like, it's actually solid enough, because he really does either try to live far enough outside to not absorb too much damage, or far enough inside to kind of make it dirty. So Manny Martinez here, he probably is the guy that possesses more finishing potential, especially being the guy that, you know, he at least knocked down Ronnie Lawrence twice for taking three himself. You know, Brandon Davis doesn't even have any knockdowns to speak for in all of his UFC fights. So, and you know what? Fighting against Guido Canetti and also doing well in that fight, you know, especially seeing the guy making the comeback for the title run.
Yeah, Guido, man.
Guido. So anyways, yeah, I mean, Manny was able to do well against him at least. So, yeah, overall, I get the -155. I actually told Guru, like, if this fight was, like, up to -180, I would be on the Manny side. But that doesn't mean I need to bet it, per se, at that price, or even bet this fight at all. So, Guru, do you have anything you need to play here? Because this one, I just think, you know, this will be my, you know, Wheezy's going to come at me with some oranges if I'm playing with this fight.
No, I think if you're on the favorite here, I don't think that's super crazy at -155. I think if you're laying mad units on it, I think that's a little crazy.
All right.
I also think that Brandon Davis looks like kind of washed to me. His whole fight, you know, his whole path back to the UFC was kind of sketchy to begin with, beating Ray Trujillo in a fight that was like a war, guys 24 and 29 and he's like going to town with each other.
Jeez.
And then
what was that?
And then you know he comes back and then like, oh, you want back to the UFC? All right, here's Denal Bakary. And Bakary puts him to sleep in 2 minutes. Like it was brutal. Davis didn't really have much to do to stop him. With that being said, I don't think Manny Martinez has the same level of power that Bakary has. And I also, it's like a double-edged sword for me when I try to handicap it. It's like, do I think Manny Martinez's chin is sketchy because he got knocked down 3 times by Ronnie Lawrence? Or am I impressed that he was able to continue to survive those knockdowns and kind of rebound quickly? So, I mean, maybe it's because he's young and in good shape. I guess overall the problem is that he's hittable. And that's the one thing that you don't want to do with Brandon Davis is be hittable and fight in a phone booth, because that's what Brandon Davis wants. I also think that his performance against Ronnie Lawrence was lackluster because he was so worried about the takedowns and had, by the middle of the fight, he had no fucking clue what was coming next. And he was just getting whooped. So yeah, I lean the Manny Martinez side, but I think what I like the most, like the under 2.5 at +105. Like I like the fight maybe not to go the distance, maybe a little bit of violence here. And especially at some plus money. I don't know. I don't trust necessarily either one of those chins, and I think that they'll go for broke. I mean, if it went to the distance, do you think that I would tell you that I'm surprised? No, I wouldn't necessarily be surprised, but I don't mind taking a stab on the plus money. Knock out some violence. Enough rambling. John Kelly, what do you got?
Yeah, I don't hate the under 2.5 either, or fight doesn't go. It's not a bad look to me. Just for starters, Martinez is a powerful striker, maybe not quite as powerful as Bacharal Bachary, however you say his name. He maybe not quite as powerful, but the dude does have knockout ability. You mentioned a big point is like he is very hittable on the feet, not just the Ronnie Lawrence fight, the Guido Canetti fight. He had like a big old goose egg on his orbital or something like that. He was fighting through, like, the dude gets stung a lot, but he is a decent striker, doesn't throw a ton of volume. The red flags with Davis for me is that he did look washed in that last fight. Like, he looked like a shell of the Davis that we saw the last time he was in the UFC. And I'm pretty sure I even bet him against Dana in that spot, which did not look good in hindsight. I'm like, if he just survives round one, I think he's super live here. Obviously did not survive round one, so we couldn't find out. But he's also had, like, some pretty serious, like, knee surgeries and whatnot. Like, he's getting older in age. Like, I do think the upside's on Manny Martinez here, but because he's sketchy, untrustworthy, bad grappler, questionable cardio, hittable on the feet, there are reasons why I'm not laying it with him here. So I don't have much here. It's not a fight that I'm super keyed in on, but I do agree with you, Guru, that if I were gonna play it, it might be the under. Probably won't be like an official play for me because I don't like it that much, but I think that's like the play that we talked about earlier, where, you know, you won a couple bets on the card already, you're feeling good, okay, now I'll throw it on the violence prop in this fight and see what happens.
Or maybe if you're put up that banner, TB, if you're diving into grandma's couch cushions. And it doesn't, you know, nobody really knows where those three pennies go. Nobody knows where that money came from. So, you know, you put a little, you know, $2, $5 right on that, and you never know. You might just cash. And yeah, man, make sure you like and subscribe, guys, please, if you haven't already. Tweet it out, send it, dude. You could have 10 followers, just retweet it. It means a lot to us, and you'd be surprised who ends up seeing it. So like, comment. Appreciate it. Make sure you're checking out John Kelly if you haven't already. If you haven't heard how sharp this guy is, like, my goodness. Like, yeah, what more do you need to hear?
Yeah, wake up, please, for God's sake.
Get it together, right? October's over. Even the guy from Green Day, I mean, September's over. Even the guy from Green Day is awake by now, man. Wake up. That was going to be funny.
It's okay. You did your best. And that is what matters, because now we are moving and grooving. We are right along. We got Rafael Assunção coming in versus Victor. I'm facing the second Brazilian in two fights. Henry. So my question though is Victor Henry getting a bigger push than Jaime Barcelos ever got?
By the way, his nickname is La Mangosta.
Like like the a lobster, but a mangosta.
Is I don't know, La Mangosta.
Like langosta is a lobster, I think, in
Mangosta
in Spanish.
I don't know.
But anyway, so Sun Tzu is +295. Victor Henry -360. Over 2.5 -145, under 2.5 +115. I think very clearly, at least in my eyes here, you know, Sun Tzu has been finished a bunch in his last few fights, but watching how it's happened specifically, it seems to be type of stuff that I don't think can be replicated necessarily by Victor Henry at this stage. That like ducking winging overhand by Cody Garbrandt, the fuck.
from hell, he reached down for the canvas, the depths of hell, and pulled that shit up and slapped that guy at the buzzer.
And also, like he was eyeing it up at the end of the round, first round too. So like, I gotta give it to him. Like that was obviously part of the game plan for Cody Garbrandt. Also, the sliding like soccer kicks on level changes. Like the fuck was going on with Cody Garbrandt? He actually put it together for a fight. In my note, Sun Tzu though actually was kind of coming on at the end in round two there. I think he had won the round up until him getting knocked down kind of with a straight right with 1 minute left. So I thought, you know, like, and then he comes into the fight against Ricky Simone and like he comes out and wings this overhand right immediately and like he catches Simone, but at the same time just gets kicked in the dick immediately, like 9 seconds into the fight. So it just resets everything, and next thing you know, Sun Tzu is getting taken down, taken down, taken down, and on his way up, just an uppercut, once again, from hell. this thing, it wasn't Vince Michel, but it was from hell. This uppercut from Ricky Simone, and this is a guy that we also saw just knock out Jack Shore in his last appearance. So that's not like some kind of joke, the type of punishment that Sun Tzu has been absorbing. A fight before that, he fights Corey Sandhagen, and he takes him to a decision using his takedowns and, you know, a nice solid game plan. So I think overall, what I'm getting to is I just don't see a Sun Tzu appropriately being a +295 in the spot to a guy in Victor Henry that was a +295 to Jaime Barcelos or even more of his last time out in the +400 range. So I think there's like a line readjustment problem here. I do think Victor Henry is the quote unquote minute winner. A Sun Tzu is very, very much so a low output type of guy. I don't trust him to win a decision, but I do trust him to make it ugly. And if he does get to those 3.42 takedown attempts per 15 and landing 1.29 per 15, and then he gets that control rate going, which for the level of competition he faced, the amount of takedowns he's landed and the amount of control he's gotten for facing TJ Dillashaw, 2 decisions, both of them losses and 0 of 8 on takedowns, but that affects your statistics big time as far as percentages go. So, I mean, the ones that he's even getting Corey Sandhagen down like 4 out of 6 times. So I'm just, if a Sun Tzu gets to the wrestling game plan here, I saw Jaime Barcelos catch a kick and take down Victor Henry with ease. And then as he's floating inside control, gives up a scramble. I think a Sun Tzu is going to be a little bit better with his control, a little bit more overall ready to handle the danger. And I think he's got much better striking defense than Barcelos did. So if anything, I think Henry showed that he can be hit. And as a -360 in his second UFC fight against a guy that's fought everyone in 17 total fights, I mean, it gets kind of old and broken, you know, I mean, just to hear that type of line over and over. But I think a Sun Tzu can kind of bring the type of power that Barcelos couldn't really scare Henry off with at the end of the day. And I think a Sun Tzu's got better defense than Barcelos had. Comparatively, a +295, I got to make a value play on it. So that's... Yeah, I probably went too much there, but what you got, man?
That was crazy, bro. You're a savage.
Yeah, I'm sorry, man.
No, you're amazing. You're like, you're just an information. You're just like a, there's so much there. Wow. Very dense. But most importantly, La Mangosta is the mongoose in Spanish. Victor Henry, the mongoose.
Okay.
Very, very important.
Thank you.
after that, I think I'll make mine short. I think there's a lot of recency bias that a Sun Tzu is going to just get mollywopped in there. So my bet is that this fight is going to go the distance. I am not laying chalk on Victor Henry -360. That's not happening. And I think Sun Tzu's pretty much washed, and I don't really think he's going to win the fight. And I'm not super interested in a dog play, even nearing plus 300. Listen, grandma's couch cushion, whatever. But I'd still rather take near plus money that this fight goes the distance, minus 125 on DraftKings. So I kind of just feel that. Am I crazy for that, John?
I don't think you're crazy. I will say this is probably the fight that I'm maybe the least excited about on the entire card.
Wow.
I'm really not thrilled with the matchmaking. I'm not thrilled with either of these guys. I think Sun Tzu, it's probably tent time for him, you know, legend of the fight game, but 40 years old at bantamweight, historically not great. Doesn't mean he can't win. I do think the biggest thing for me is like the pace of Victor Henry. I think Sun Tzu is historically a low volume guy. I highly doubt he's going to be able to keep pace with Victor Henry and the durability. Like Sun Tzu over the course of his career was pretty durable. Now he's on a 4-fight losing streak over the hill. Like I said, 40 years old, and he's been finished in 3 of his last 4 losses. So I think the pace, the volume, the cardio, the durability, all of those things favor Victor Henry. I think he's the rightful favorite. But do I trust him out of minus 360? Absolutely not. This is going to be a pass for me.
Yeah, very stern, very true. And I appreciate it. You can't be laying chalk in Victor Henry, especially when you just, hopefully, if you were crazy and smart, you were able to get him crazy plus money in the last fight. So hopefully you're full on that. And yeah, you can't be laying juice on this because anything can happen in this fight game. We see it all the time. But no, I think Sun Tzu is, I think for sure you're going to see on Tuesday that Sun Tzu is off, is on that UFC roster watch. So cheers, buddy. If you ever want to come on the show, we'd have a beer about it, but you know, I wish you all the best. He's dude was a legend, man. And he's made it, he's become a huge stepping ladder. I mean, in his last 7 fights or whatever, he's fought Marlon Moraes twice, TJ Dillashaw, Aljamain Sterling, Rob Font, Corey Sandhagen, Cody Garbrandt, Ricky Simone. I mean, he's been a major part of the division, man. So he deserves his respect, but I think he's getting shown the door.
Would you entertain like a decision, a finish only prop for Munoz potentially? I don't see him winning a decision in any universe.
Wait, what?
To win by finish only.
I think if you are going to play him, Henry? I would prefer that.
A Sun Tzu. For a Sun Tzu.
Yeah. I knew what you meant.
If you were going to do a Sun Tzu, I'm trying to find it now. Money line. Yeah. Finish only. And you go to a Sun Tzu, it's plus 350. It's like even better.
Yeah.
Because I just don't think Henry finishes him personally.
If you're going to play him.
Yeah. And then you get your money back when a Sun Tzu loses 30-26, 30-26, 30-27.
I still like even money. The fight goes the distance.
We could certainly play both, and you get your money back when it goes the distance.
There you go. Anyway,
hey, I like that. So certainly a thought there.
You know, worth a quarter unit potentially. I'm not saying let's go crazy, but this is my. You know, I'm taking the trip to grandma this time. You know, Guru is giving his grandparents a rest. On this one, I'll do a workout here with my own family.
Let's move on to this next flop fest.
Oh man, here we go. We got Nick Maximov versus Jacob Malkoon. The line's been sliding a little bit. Now Maximov is minus 135. Open is a bigger favorite. Malkoon plus 115. Maximov going to be 3 inches taller, 3 inches more reach, 4-inch leg reach. Nick Diaz Academy for whatever it's worth.
Nick Diaz, bro.
Well, I think Malkoon being like Whitaker's main training partner and like grappling partner and stuff is, you know, probably more important at this point than Maximov being the, you know, under the guru tutelage of the Diaz bros. As we've seen, we were like, oh, there's no way he could get submitted by Petrovsky.
Get submitted quick.
So
Petrovsky looked like a weight class bigger than him. He's so thick in comparison. It was nuts.
That's true.
He literally like big brothered him.
I mean, it was a gilly, right?
Yeah. He just out scrambled him too. It was really impressive.
That's fair. Well, I mean, so I guess the question here is like Malkoon's got like that orangutan strength. he's just like, he's so strong when you see him like just smother people, go for takedown, and his cardio doesn't let up at all. It was like
he has he actually has like elite level cardio, especially when it comes to the grappling.
Unreal. Yeah. So, I mean, the over 2.5 minus 280, totally get it, because Maximov, for all of his efforts to finish people, he just can't ever do it. At least the UFC or Dana White Contender Series level. And then Malkoon, for all of his efforts, like actually has some people hurt here or there, solid control. Like, you know, as much as he'll go for 17.8 takedowns per 15, actually it passed Nick Maximov 15 takedowns per 15. Do we see a stand-up fest between these guys, Guru?
I think it's more of like a scramble fest mixed in with some laying on top of each other and the occasional boxing. But like, yeah, this is really sloppy fight. And it's also unfortunate because you see, you've got Nick with the height, the reach, and the age advantage, but you still don't, you don't have Guru convinced, even though generally you're winning 60, at least 60% of those fights. I'm not sure the tape is lined up. I'm not sure. Neither guy, Nick Maximov has questionable fight IQ for sure, or just relative game plan and upside into what he's doing here in the UFC. And you probably can basically say the same for Jacob Malkoon. Mm-hmm. So I'm not really fully sure. I lean towards the dog just because it's I think it's more of a coin flip, and I'll take plus money on a coin flip. But maybe I bet John's got something sharp. So
Malkoon and friends.
Malkoon and friends. What do you got for us, John?
I'm considering I'm probably going to bet Nick Maximov here. So we've agreed on most of the cards so far. Ooh. So it seems like we finally found a spot where okay, maybe I'm by myself here. But I do think Maximov does have a couple advantages here. I do think, to answer your question, TB, I don't think it's going to be a stand-up fight. I think there's going to be a lot of crotch sniffing going on in this one, because that's typically how both of these guys fight, right? Like Malkoon is going to look to stay glued to him. He's going to chase that single leg. Maximov has a really good single leg himself. I think Maximov is the better submission grappler. I think Maximov's the better scrambler as well, you know, and maybe even the better wrestler, honestly. Like, I do think it's going to be competitive. It's not that he's like going to completely dog walk Malkoon on the mat, but I do favor him in those areas. I think he's going to be the bigger fighter as well, potentially a strength advantage. So I just think it's going to be a pure grappling fight, whereas I want to fade Maximov with guys that can hang in the grappling, but also make him pay in the striking. And I just don't even think that's going to be in play here at all. I think it's going to be a pure grappling match, and I think that's where we're going to see Maximov kind of shine. So I actually think this line is very playable on Maximov. So I'm just kind of waiting, because there's been a lot of Malkoon love out there. Malkoon obviously has had a ton of grappling success so far. But I think that changes here. I'm going to go with the kid in Maximov.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah. You make a lot of interesting points too. And, the problem with Jacob Malkoon, it's exactly what I was saying to TV when we were looking at tape. It's like Malkoon, somebody that's not doing the damage with the striking. He's not searching for submissions. Really. He's not like landing ground and pound and doing heavy damage. Like, it's his most impressive in terms of landing strikes was the Dobson fight, right? So if you didn't do tape on AJ Dobson for this fight with Malkoon, you're gonna have to do it next week when he fights Petrosian. But he lands like 50 ground strikes in that second round. But like, the first of the dude, AJ Dobson's exhausted, and he does no damage with these strikes. 50 strikes, and he's not doing damage. So I was not impressed by it, even though that should be impressive, and that's not good. So, yeah, I mean, maybe my like was too, and like as a better, like you get kind of annoyed that you lose money and you can make the wrong choice, right? Not want to play Maximov, like the recency bias of it. So I could see it, right? Especially like I said, when you have the younger guy with the height and the reach advantage, I certainly like it. I just don't trust Nick at all. Mm. So I just don't know. And yeah, very tough. TB, anything else?
No, I think I'm still slightly on the Malkoon side, but I'll probably be looking for like a prop to make it more juicy. Like, looking for Malkoon decision or something, just because I did lose some value on that dog line. And I imagine by the time I want to bet it after I see the face off, we might be looking at like even money here based on the trend.
And he might look a lot smaller than Nick.
Oh, he's going to, but he also just faced Brendan Allen and also looked a lot smaller, and like half of the media people scored it for him. So it's like,
that was a really close fight.
Yeah, too. I think it's going to be close in the scrambling exchanges. And yeah, it does come down to, I think, who ends up in top position or who ends up, you know, dealing out more damage at the end of the day to, you know, make it close like that. So, we'll see here. I mean, I think Maximov could certainly come out and, you know, start regaining some of that trust lost, you know, if he plays his cards right here, that's for sure. But next fight.
Yeah,
we definitely got the next one. Joanderson Brito versus Lucas Alexander. And I think we might be looking at another example of a line issue. Brito giving up 2 inches of height on paper. I'd love to see the face off for a guy making his debut on less than a week's notice. But Lucas Alexander, his last fight was on Anthony Pettis Fight Club 1. Pretty interesting stuff for a guy that was fighting in like a 10-foot octagon a few fights back. Like it was some interesting stuff on the regional scene, but facing a guy that was like diving immediately for the legs the entire time. Another fight, he was actually had kind of a close one. And by the time round three came around, he just pulls away in the championship fight. But Alexander, what I came away impressed with was, you know, he seems to have like generally solid takedown defense and principles. He seems to be aware of what's going on, but guys tend to get in on him and get him in these clinch positions along the fence and manipulate. And you see it in his last fight against Kilburn before he's able to land all these combos. So the question, though, is like, is he UFC caliber? I mean, I think there was, you know, a solid base to his skills and striking to get him this call. And Brito, if he keeps this on the feet and from distance and starts throwing wildly, I think he's going to find it tough to touch Alexander in the stand-up. I think if he uses those big swinging overhands to get into the clinch, go for a back take, go for, you know, body triangle, I think we could be looking at TB looking to make a little submission prop play here. It's not posted yet. We don't have any lines, but I did notice that Brito has 6 submission wins and 4 knockout wins. Yeah. So
I like that.
It's something that he goes for, and he was going for a lot of grappling positions against Bill Algeo, who just so happens to have a very legit black belt, who was allowing him to get into for takedowns. So Alexander, there could be value, but I mean, Brito by submission, I think that might end up being my final play.
I was about to say, I think you have to throw up the banner, bro. I think it's a greasy submission prop.
No, I was gonna say I wasn't being a hater, am I? Good.
Wait,
okay.
You were saying, how are you being a hater? It's a submission.
No, I don't know. I was giving both guys credit. Right? So yeah, greasy Brito, submission right? for Brito. That's prop
for sure.
If it's posted at like +300, +400, because the dude's such a big favorite, and I have a feeling his knockout is gonna be like -110 because he just knocked out Feely, and then like his decision because he went to decision against Algeo and lost, like his decision prop might be like +200. Maybe we get submission like +300 or +400. That's the prediction. I'm hoping. Is it open anywhere else? Can anyone else tell me? Because it's not on DraftKings.
It's not on DraftKings or FanDuel. So,
I mean, Guru, you got any different thoughts on the fight, or did I?
No, I'm thinking. Listen, what I saw from Lucas Alexander. First off, he beat. That's a good question, Papa Chuck.
What up, Papa?
He beat Jacob Kilburn, who's a former UFC fighter, in a pretty decent fight. He does a lot of damage from range, right? He likes to use his kicking, his kicking is actually really smooth. He doesn't throw a lot of telegraph into what he's doing, so you can get fighters kind of fooled with that. So I do believe that Lucas Alexander belongs in the UFC. He certainly has the size for the division, which is interesting. That with all that being said, Joanderson Brito is a different kind of size, and that dude is just thick. And I expect him to take it to Lucas Alexander. And I didn't see great takedown defense from Alexander. And Joanderson Brito is going to come at him like a bat out of hell. And I think he's going to put him in some interesting positions. And I kind of like a greasy sub prop if we can get some really good chunky odds on it. Otherwise, Yeah, I think it's kind of a pass and learn about Lucas Alexander, and Joannison Brito probably gets it done. What do you think, John?
Yeah, I'm actually with you guys both. That is going to be a look for me. We obviously don't have the prop numbers yet for it, but I do think that submission for Brito is super live here. So it's going to depend on the price, whether or not I play it. But I think Alexander, that's clearly a leak in his game. It's his defensive grappling. I think he could be taken down. I think he could be controlled, and I think he could be submitted. Both of his professional losses have come by first round submission. I think Brito is a sneaky good grappler. You know, you saw on the Contender Series fight, he went up against Diego Lopez, who's a pretty solid grappler over in Lux fight promotion, and he was able to take him down multiple times, defend submissions well, and even you know, kind of threaten a little bit as well. I think Brito just has him covered here. You know, Lucas Alexander, I'm not going to go as far to say that he's like a bum or anything like that, but I do think this is a tough spot for him on short notice against a guy that's more powerful on the feet and has all the grappling upside. So I like Brito. I think Brito probably gets a finish.
I like it. I do. I really do. I think he gets it one too.
Yeah.
I love a little bit of violence. A little bit of violence in the afternoon.
All right, so here we go. We got our next fight. We are rolling along here, getting towards the end or the beginning, depending on which perspective you're looking at. instead of invoking Einstein's relativity, we're getting into Pierre Rodriguez. Whoa.
Blowing my mind, man.
Yeah, don't worry about it. Pierre Rodriguez versus Sam Hughes. Pierre has given up a little size, 2 inches shorter, 1 inch less reach. Pierre is minus 165, Sam Hughes plus 140, over 2.5 minus 300, under 2.5 plus 235. I guess the question of the day comes down to how much has Pierre worked on that takedown defense? How much has she improved at not being controlled? And is she going to go ahead and put the hurting on zero defense Sam Hughes? It's more so that Sam Hughes' opponents put a pace on her. Part of that's having faced Tisha Torres. Part of that's having faced other people like Estela Nunes and stuff that have actually, you know, bothered her on the feet for the limited time that they spent on the feet. Really comes down to Sam Hughes imposing her grappling or not. She's going to have a bit of a size advantage. I want to see how much of face-offs could end up being a dog play. I'm leaning towards a dog or pass situation. But Pierre on the feet also has some knockout potential to where I feel like actually playing this fight not to go the distance at like a plus 200 type of idea isn't the craziest thing I've ever heard, but I'm going to leave grandma alone on this fight. If anything, I'll make a solid dog play if I think Hughes looks like crazy bigger and in great shape and Pierre comes in not looking so hot, stuff like that. Like, I think I could end up like on a solid dog play, but I can't really recommend anything heavy at this point without that info, just because while I lean the dog, I do think Pierre is going to be much better from distance. It's just like, I can't guarantee mentally based off the scouting if she can get her offer enough in the grappling.
Yeah, I actually lean towards the favorite here. I think like, maybe, I guess like you were saying, but I understand not wanting to necessarily play it. I'm not really necessarily the biggest fan of Sam Hughes, although she's certainly displayed some very good cardio and, you know, her ability to use the grappling is, you know, she wants to implement a specific game plan and she certainly can do it. You've seen Pierre Rodriguez get taken down by Kay Hansen in her debut. With that being said, she was also able to take Kay Hansen down and hold her down. So, I'm certainly interested to see this fight and learn more about both of these two chicks to see if Sam Hughes continues to have the medal to be able to stay in the UFC and if Pierre Rodriguez has the medal to belong in the UFC. I do think Pierre Rodriguez is the grittier fighter. She's got more power. I think she's going to be the better striker, has more variety to her strikes. And I think if Sam Hughes is getting hurt on the feet and then can't get takedowns or can't hold her position if she's getting a couple takedowns, I think it's going to be a problem. But when you lean to the cardio for Sam Hughes, it's certainly interesting. But I like Pierre Rodriguez to do a little bit more damage. But even still at minus 165, I'm still not itching for it. So maybe John's got something something sexy for this one. What do you got for us, John?
Yeah, I'm definitely more interested in the dog, so I'll side with TB on this one. I do think early prices on Sam Hughes were good. I think even now in the plus 140, 150 range, depending on where you get it, is still probably playable. I don't know if I'll get there. We'll see. I'm definitely considering it. I do think this is a competitive fight for starters. Pyro Rodriguez, former Contender Series fighter. So for those that don't know, I do a lot of work with Dana White Contender Series on my YouTube. I tape all of those prospects, pretty much every fight you can find on the internet. So I feel like I have a pretty decent grasp on them. Her last fight against Kay Hansen, you know, most people were on Kay Hansen there. Mm-hmm. I actually bet Pyro Rodriguez cashed that, but I honestly think it was like kind of a stock down for me in terms of her performance. Like, she made that fight as close as she possibly could have, when in reality, skill for skill, I think she should have been like a big favorite against Kay Hansen. So that's kind of a red flag for me. She's not a high volume striker. She is powerful, to your point, Guru. I do think she could have success with the leg kicks. Sam Hughes is very, very hittable on the feet. She's kind of a punching bag. Yes, she's going to move forward. She's going to look to put a pace on her opponent, mix in the wrestling, especially in her last couple fights. But she is very, very defensively lapsed, I'll say. So I do think Pyro Rodriguez does have power, could land some impactful strikes. But I think the cardio dynamic is what is have me just ever so slightly favoring the Hughes side. Like, she's won round three, and I think all but one of her fights. And in, I forget which fight it was, but that one fight, she even, I think it was the Pinheiro fight, she even had round three on one of the judges' scorecards. So has almost won round three in all of her fights that have lasted three rounds. She's got excellent cardio, and Pyra kind of slows down as the fight goes on. Honestly, I think this is just a really close kind of coin flippy fight that honestly might end with, or might, it might just come down to whichever fighter ends up in top position, because I do think both of them are probably capable of landing takedowns here. So in that scenario, I think you'd rather obviously have the plus 140, plus 150 if you think it plays out that closely.
Yeah, you're right. You're right.
I like that. I like
that. You're 1,000% right too. It, and when you say that, whether you convince me on the side or not, it's like, do I think this fight's a coin flip? And I agree with that sentiment right there. So if I agree with that in principle, then I have to be on the dog.
Yeah. Overall, I think that's fair. And as much as I've been like smelling dogs and stuff like that, I think as we get to these last two fights here, I might have to start flipping my direction, because we got, for first off, Tatsuro Taira versus CJ Vergara. Minus 240 to plus 200. Taira is going to have a 1-inch height advantage. Don't know what happened with that reach there. apologies, but Tatsuro Taira's reach is 70 inches. So he's going to have a 2-inch reach advantage, 1-inch height, 2-inch reach. And then, it looks like his stuff just got entered slightly weird, but I'll fix that anyways. But CJ Vergara, I think what he's shown is the same kind of thing we were talking about earlier with the willingness to let people inside and even get these takedown attempts off. And for a guy in Taira that has three submission attempts in his first UFC appearance against a high-level grappler, I think Vergara is one of those, like, you know, if I can stuff the takedown, I'm in a good spot. But if not, that control time ain't going to look so good. Ultimately, I don't feel so great. I feel like if Vergara thinks he could lean on that 23% control rate here and, like, you know, hold Taira up against the fence, like, that's not going to happen in this spot. He's got to win from distance. And I think Taira is actually pretty solid when it comes to his striking fundamentals, where at the end of the day, he's just going to end up backpacking this guy. And I'll be looking for submissions. So Tatsuro Taira by submission is plus 350. That's disgusting. Yeah, give me
a nap. Throw up the banner, baby.
Let's go. Up. That's it. It's time again, because we got another greasy submission prop. And this one we actually got the line for. So plus 350 is greasy enough for me. Let's go.
I couldn't agree with it more. I'm a big fan of CJ Vergara. He's come in. He looked, he wins his Dana White Contender Series fight as an underdog. He looks pretty decent against Ode Osborne, and then wins another tough, close decision as an underdog against Clinton Rodriguez. So, you know, couldn't be happier for the guy. good fighter, exciting fighter. I just don't actually think that he's like a very good fighter or like necessarily somebody with a super high ceiling. Whereas Tatsuro Taira, I certainly do feel as though he has a high ceiling. 22 years old, has just looked incredible. Maybe could have even looked better versus Carlos Condelario, but he had a tough situation with Condelario missing weight or getting sick. He made weight and then got sick, and then they rescheduled the fight for the week later, so he stayed out in the States, and then he still wins the fight. I hope he got that cheeseburger he asked for. Dude's a stud, young stud, and I think he's going to get it done here, and I think he gets it done by sub. So what do you think, Mr. Kelly?
Yeah, I'm with you guys again. You guys are opening my eyes on a couple prop looks here. I did not see a plus 350. I think that's very playable for Taira against Vergara, who honestly gives up his back a lot. And now he's going up against a guy who basically specializes in taking your back. So I think plus 350 is fine. I'd much rather play that than the money line at minus 240. You know, Vergara does have probably the cardio edge here, and that's really probably his best asset. You mentioned the Contender Series fight, really looked great against, it was Bruno Correa, I believe, fought on I think the Spanish Ultimate Fighter or the Ultimate Fighter Brazil. I picked Correa in that spot. If that tells you anything of what I think of Vergara, is I did not expect him to win even on Contender Series. He's looked better to his credit than I've originally gave him credit for, but I do still think he's kind of a punching bag on the feet. He's got okay power, gets hit way too much. I think he's liable defensively, especially in the grappling exchanges, and now he's going up against somebody that I think is going to look to grapple him here. So even though I think he probably has the cardio edge, I don't think it's going to be enough in this spot. I expect Taira to land takedowns, take the back, and potentially submit him. So I like the submission prop with you guys at plus 350.
Awesome. I always love hearing when somebody like you agrees with us, because really validates the work that we do, because man, hearing you talk, man, you lay things out, and it's really sharp stuff. You know exactly, you know it all. I mean, not at all. Obviously nobody knows it all, but you, nobody knows it all, but no, you really lay it out in a really sharp and clear cut way. And I enjoy listening to it personally.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
You get me to that party too, but fantastic. Yeah. So this has been a great time so far. And I think this brings us to our last fight, right?
It's our curtain call or.
So I guess.
With the opener. We
can't curtain jerker for the fans on Saturday, but
easy with the jerking.
Whoa, easy. So anyways, shout out the chat guys, smoking some Khalifa Kush. What's going on? Any action, Effie? Any action sports podcast? Papa Chuck. Oh yeah, making me jealous. So hey guys, make sure if you're still here hanging with us, very important, you like, subscribe, support the channel, retweets all your friends, let them know about Chronic Combat and how their grandma lets them take all their money from the couch. You know how cool is that? So anyways, our final fight here, Mike Jackson versus Pete Rodriguez. This is just an interesting one. I mean, Mike Jackson going to have a 5-inch height advantage, 1-inch reach advantage. But I mean, like, breaking this fight down from any like normal perspective doesn't really make sense. Pete Rodriguez is a minus 675 and Mike Jackson's a plus 500. And when you look at their experience and like kind of how they approach the general striking game and or just everything in MMA, it kind of makes sense. But like, we're also talking about 25-year-old Pete Rodriguez, undersized for the division. Questions could come out of like, you know, exactly what, you know, like dominate MMA. I'm not sure what other guys he's getting work with at the gym. And, you know, I'd love to learn more about what he's doing behind the scenes. And like, you know, one of those things like, oh, if you could talk to him ahead of time or watch his interviews and stuff and get a little more info for some of these guys, I think I got to do a little bit more digging, especially on a minus 675. But if there was going to be anything, I mean, like, you got to imagine it's Pete Rodriguez knockout, which is minus 300. And then Pete Rodriguez by round one knockout is minus 165. So do you go like, oh, my God, does Mike Jackson find some way to survive? Because round two knockout is plus 700.
that's actually funny.
I don't know. But like,
I like a little grandma couch cushion. play on that. Like, you want to find you want to no like a dollar, bro. Like, you got a dollar or two to throw on a round two knockout. That's kind of funny, but I don't, dude. I like Pete Rodriguez. I think he's kind of exciting, but that doesn't mean that he's very good or anything or trustworthy. Mike Jackson was just able to win a fight, broke every, we avoided that one. I remember it. We did not play that.
I bet Mike Jackson by knockout.
Well, there you go, right? People were laying Dean
like
Barry
a dollar.
Dean Barry and all their parlays, and it cost them because he gets kicked in the balls twice and poked in the eye, and he's like, "Yeah, I'm good on all that now." So he gets a dub. Very interesting character. Mike Jackson takes is a photographer, and then I guess part time MMA fighter. So yeah, there's nothing. The line is juiced to the tits, as MMA Uncle Weezy would say, and yeah, not interested. Go Pete. What do you got, John?
Yeah, you know, you mentioned his photography background. That, let's be honest, this dude is not a real fighter. he comes from like a regional boxing background. The only reason he's on the UFC roster is because he's good buddies with Mick Maynard. That's the reason he was put on the Mickey Gall fight or the Mickey Gall?
Mickey Gall. He gets Mickey Gall and then he gets CM Punk.
Yeah, the Mickey Gall fight, it was like they needed somebody last minute, couple days notice. He originally said no, but then he found out it was the UFC. He knew he wasn't ready to fight, said yes, gets put on the roster. Then they give him the meme fight in CM Punk. He hasn't looked good in any of them. He's 37 years old. The last fight he was involved with was literally a laughing stock of the entire community. It was just pathetic on both counts. So this dude is not a real fighter to me. At 37 years old, he's not getting any better. And he's going up against a guy in Pete Rodriguez who, yes, he only has 5 professional fights. He's very, very green. But say what you want about him, the dude has a ton of power. And he's going to throw at you with everything that he has. He's never fought into the second round. So I do think a knockout in round one is the most likely outcome here. And a little fun fact, too, is I have a good buddy out in Arizona that actually used to be Pete's boss where he worked. With him quite a while. One day Pete said, "Hey, I quit. I'm going to be a fighter." And turns out he's pretty good at it. And that was like when he was fighting on the regional scene. So Pete is actually, he's on a fight to fight originally, but if he wins this fight, he gets a contract. So I think he's got a lot more to fight for, whereas Jackson is, you know, he's just here to collect a paycheck and have a good story to tell his kids and grandkids, I guess, in the future. And I know that's a little bit narrative as well, but I do just think skill for skill, Rodriguez is going to clip him at some point, and I don't think Jackson has the durability to take it.
No. And the way he fights like he thinks he's Spider-Man. His hands are like over here. I don't even know what he's doing. It's wild. And Pete, if you have Fight Pass, go watch his Icon fights, because literally you can watch all 4 of them in under 5 minutes. It's fucking awesome stuff. He literally just brutalizes people. It's like sleep time, like just awesome stuff. So I'd like to see him get a knockout to start out the night. So that would be pretty cool. But I don't think there's really any way to shave this fight and make money.
Yeah. I think the end of the day for this one, you should probably just stay away. But ultimately, I mean, that brings us to the end of our show, and if you guys haven't already, make sure you go and subscribe to our buddy, John Kelly DFS. Go ahead to his channel over there. That's what it looks like. Make sure you find the right one. And finally, please like and subscribe over here, too.
Make sure you guys had a good time. Yeah, listen, thanks so much for tuning in. If you haven't checked out John Kelly, make sure you're doing that. If you haven't followed me, I'm at Guru Scouting MMA on Twitter, Verdict, Instagram, Tapology. My incredible co-host, TB Scouting MMA, Twitter, Verdict, Instagram, Tapology. Guys, I don't know why I haven't plugged it yet. We just launched our website, chroniccombat.com. Go check it out. We're all there. I mean, it's the links to everything. Just a nice little layout, but we've officially launched that. That's super exciting. Next week, UFC 280. Charles Oliveira versus Islam Makhachev for the lightweight title. Incredible, incredible stuff. We have Aaron Bronstadter coming on. Could not be more excited to have him on as well. Super interesting guy. Can't wait to chat it up with him about literally some incredible, incredible fights. So make sure you tune in next week as well. And thanks so much.